Good morning and happy Sunday, and of course, a late happy Thanksgiving. I hope you enjoyed the holiday weekend. Welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and like every Sunday, I'll be here for an hour discussing hot news topics and current events. My topic of the week, which again is meant to be thought-provoking and perhaps a little controversial, and this week it certainly is, as we dive into Catholicism and how it manages to still thrive and recruit members after years of atrocities and foul play within its organization. I'll also have what has become listeners' favorite, the Petty, and he will, of course, be giving his NFL picks for the games today and for next week. But first, I want to do what I like to do the most, and let's talk about the news from the past week. So I hope you're feeling great, because I'm feeling great, and I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. Earlier in the week, ABC News WMAR TV2 Baltimore reported on EBT card users, including SNAP recipients, being the victims of theft. Apparently, Maryland families who are already in need and receiving funds from the state and federal government are being targeted by criminals who are scanning their EBT card information and have stolen an estimated $1 million from these families. These thieves are using card skimming machines, just as they have with credit cards and debit cards, but targeting EBT card and SNAP card users specifically because they know exactly when those federal assistance benefits for these members will be deposited into their accounts. And most recipients who have been stolen from report that the funds are stolen in the middle of the night, just a few minutes or hours after their monthly allotments have been deposited on their cards. What makes it worse is that these families are reporting these crimes to the Maryland Department of Human Services, but the state refuses to replace their benefits, telling them that it's a federal funding issue and it's nothing that the state can do. However, states like California and the District of Columbia have already been reimbursing victims with local funds, and that inconsistent response by states caught the attention of a Maryland congressman, Dutch Ruppersberger. And Wednesday, he introduced legislation that would replace SNAP benefits stolen due to identity theft. He said that states are already allocated money for theft reimbursements, and the bill that he proposes would extend federal law to now cover this kind of theft. Congressman Ruppersberger said that the bill would not be retroactive, meaning that people who have been stolen from previous to this bill will not be reimbursed. But going forward, anyone experiencing this kind of victimization would have an opportunity for reimbursement. So there are two things that come out of this story for me, one which we already knew. And that's, there's some horrible people in this world. I mean, stealing from people who are already down on their luck, behind the eight ball, struggling to make ends meet, whatever term you want to use. I mean, look, stealing is bad, but stealing from people who can least afford to be stolen from, who you know are already struggling, stealing from them, yo, I mean, the universe has a special kind of karma brewing just for you. I mean, I truly believe that. But the silver lining, the second part of all of this, is seeing that Congress can work. Having a congressman say, here's a problem that is affecting thousands of my constituents, and I have the power to fix it, and then does something about it, is exactly what taxpayers pay their congressman for. And the best part about it for me is that he's not proposing a bill that's going to take months or years to legislate and then be passed. He's like, no, this needs to happen like right now, and he's making sure that that is in fact the case. So hats off to Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger, who recognized the problem and decided to get involved and make changes right away.
For a lot of people like myself, we don't have families, so LGBT people really need somewhere that is a safe space, and Club Q gave that to us.
That was the voice of a young transgendered woman who was interviewed after the mass shooting in Colorado Springs at Club Q, an LGBTQ community nightclub. 22-year-old Anderson Lee Aldridge, who was in court for the first time virtually on Wednesday, killed five people in that club and hurt several others, while armed with a 9mm handgun and an AR-15 style rifle. The nightclub in Colorado Springs was said to be a very popular safe haven for LGBT community members, and also catered to those who are not in the LGBTQ community, and everyone seemed to get along just fine. And to that fact, Richard Fierro, an Army veteran who was celebrating a birthday at the club with his family and friends who was not in the LGBTQ community, was the person that stopped the massacre by jumping on Aldridge and beating him severely with the handgun that Aldridge was using. Law enforcement feel that Fierro saved many lives that night, and he's being hailed as a hero, and rightfully so. Aldridge, the shooter, was arrested, then taken to the hospital to receive treatment for the wounds from the beating that he took from Fierro, and then he was taken to jail. Now, in addition to this mass shooting, we had two others that took place actually in Virginia. One at UVA, the University of Virginia, three football players were killed by a former teammate. And we had another one in Chesapeake, Virginia, where the manager of a Walmart killed five people, the youngest of those five people being 16 years old. I'm not exactly sure what Congress thinks they're being paid for. I really don't know. I know they give themselves a pay raise every so often, and they have a hard time coming together seemingly to agree on anything. But I don't blame congressmen for gun laws not being changed. I mean, I really don't. They're getting millions of dollars from lobbyists to not change gun laws. And here's a newsflash. It's not just on the right. It's not just Republicans. It's Democrats, too. So when we talk about how we want things to change and we don't do anything to help change it, meaning when it's time to vote and we don't vote them out. See, when you get a job as a congressman or a senator and you can stay there for 20, 30, 40, 50 years doing the bare minimum, why would you change? We as constituents, voters, we continue to reward bad behavior and poor performance by re-electing these people over and over and over again, and somehow expecting things to change. That is not how change is done. What you do is what we don't do. We do our homework. We research candidates. We research what their platform is. And then we vote based on what we know, not what we heard, but what we have researched and we know. That is not how we have been doing things. And that is the reason why each one of these shooters in each one of these cases was able to legally purchase a firearm. That's the reason why. Fun fact, the majority of sitting senators and congressmen voted into office are voted in having a salary of less than $110,000. Most of them considerably less before they get into Congress, right? 5 years after being in Congress, most of them are now millionaires. So where did that money come from? Because there's not a position in Congress or Senate that pays $1 million. They're not getting paid to do their job. They're being paid millions outside of Congress to not do their jobs. So why do we keep re-electing these people? It's because we as voters are lazy. And it's because of our laziness that a lot of the same things are happening as far as mass shootings. We're not pulling the trigger, but we're not forcing anyone in Congress to do their jobs to make it harder for someone to get a gun to pull the trigger. We have to show that we are a people that will not stand for it and vote these people who have not made any changes. We need to vote them out of office. Plain and simple. That's the only way things are going to change. There's not a senator or a congressman right now that's going to suddenly develop a conscience overnight because of this mass shooting and decide, hey, we need to do something. They don't really care. Speaking of things not changing, for decades, the Catholic Church has dealt with the pre-sex abuse crisis as allegations have surfaced worldwide. The church has paid out more than $3 billion, that's $3 billion, to settle sexual abuse claims, according to an analysis of bishopaccountability.org, an online database that tracks the sex abuse crisis. More than 6,800, that's 6,800 U.S. Catholic priests, have been credibly accused of sexual abuse, according to an analysis by bishopaccountability.org of U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishop data. And there are at least 19,000 survivors of sexual abuse by U.S. Catholic priests. Okay, Brian, why are you talking about this today? This is something that most people know about, and the Catholic Church, the Pope himself, said that he was going to try and handle. Well, I'm talking about it today because in December of 2018, Pope Francis did call for all priests who have raped and molested children to turn themselves in. He promised at that time that the Catholic Church would never again cover up sexual abuse by clergy. Well, here we are just 4 short years later, and Maryland Attorney General Brian Frosch released a statement 10 days ago saying his office is seeking approval from the Baltimore City Circuit Court to release the 463-page report to the public. He said it shows many, many instances of child sexual abuse from priests and other employees of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. And it involves more than 150-some priests and other employees who were accused of abuse by the victims. The Attorney General states that the investigation identified more than 600 victims and said that there are almost certainly hundreds more. And the Department of Justice annual crime victimization report has demonstrated that the most incidents of sexual assault go unreported. He also said that the investigation found the Archdiocese went through great lengths to keep abuse secret. The motion states that the Archdiocese failed to take action or report sexual abuse, conduct adequate investigations, and remove abusers from the ministry. The report also went on to say that the Archdiocese for many, many decades did everything they possibly could to keep the information about the abuse out of the public eye, away from the press, and out of the court. When Archbishop of Baltimore, William Lurie, was asked about how he felt about the scandal, he said this.
I can tell you this resonates very deeply in my mind and in my heart.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I don't believe you because you are still gearing up. You're still putting on your collar, your hat. You're still doing all the things that you used to do to get more members, to bring more money into the Catholic Church. But I don't hear him on any station, on any channel, radio or TV, with an outpouring of, we must stop this. Haven't heard it. Have not seen it. So how much is it really bothering you, Archbishop, or anybody else within the Catholic Church organization until you get caught? All right, so it's that time of the show where we bring on my special guest, who today, again, is Dr. Reverend Lori Hairston. She's been with us before, and she is our aficionado as it comes to religion, Christianity, and in particular today, Catholicism. She has her own personal ties with the Catholic faith, and hopefully she can shed some light and maybe even help us understand some of the things that have been found out by the AG's probe here in Baltimore and the things that have gone on for generations around the world in Catholicism with Catholic priests. Good morning, Reverend Dr. Hairston. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am doing well. I want to thank you so much for coming on this morning. It's always a pleasure to have you here. And you being an official member of 1500 Radio makes it doubly special. So thank you for coming on this morning.
Thank you for asking me. I'm glad to be back.
All right, well, this isn't an easy topic for you. It's not an easy topic for me because I have my own personal stake in the Catholic religion over the years. But first of all, tell us how you are involved. I know you have your own personal story about the Catholic faith and what it means to you. How does that go?
Sure. So let me just give you a little background, I guess. In terms of Catholicism, I know that you already know that Baltimore is one of the major areas in the United States that has an overflow of Black Catholics. It's one of the largest areas that we find Black Catholics. And so for me, both my mother's family and my father's family or Catholic. I was raised Catholic in a mixed church, meaning that it was half Black, half white, and then went into other parishes as I continued to grow that were all Black.
Okay.
And so the Catholic Church has been my spiritual foundation. It is what the only faith that I grew up knowing, didn't really get exposed to any form of Protestantism until I was really in college. So a lot of who I am spiritually has come out of the teachings that I was taught as a kid. And growing up, and for me at that point, they were all good, you know. They were all about God is love, and nothing tragic or traumatizing happened to me at least in the first 17 years of my life. So okay. It was up until that point a safe haven.
Is it difficult for you to hear the things that you've heard just over the last 2 weeks? I mean, you know, the Attorney General Brian Frosch of Maryland came out with this. I think it was a 456-page report about the archdiocese and the priests. Was it 158 priests that were accused of molestation?
Right. So in the report, he lists an additional. The Catholic Church in Baltimore, the Catholic Archdiocese, names 115 what they call credibly accused priests and religious brothers. This report, or the filing, I guess, the Attorney General did this 35-page filing in order for the court to release the 456-page document on the investigation, names an additional 43 priests that brings it up into 158. And, you know, Brian, I can't say that it was numbing to me. What it did was it pushed it over the top.
Right.
For me, because then it brought it home. You know, the chickens have come home to roost, so to speak, with Baltimore Catholicism. And for me, like I said, it just kind of pushed me over the edge. I was, as many people have, I had difficulty 20 years ago. I believe that this year is the 20th anniversary of the Boston Globe's investigative
right.
reporting on all of the sexual abuse that was covered up. And then, you know, a few years ago, We heard another round of this out of France, the same story of all of these priests, you know, that sexually abuse boys and girls, and the means by which the hierarchy in the church has gone through to cover it up. And then we get to Philadelphia, and the same thing happens, and now Baltimore. And so it has really kind of brought me to a place where even though I, as I think I talked about the last time I was on your show, went through a process of going from being Catholic and into the Protestant faith and becoming a minister in a Baptist denomination, I still held very close ties to the parish that I consider to be my home church in Baltimore and to the people there. So at this point, you know, I'm in a whole different realm in terms of my feelings about the church and where we are now.
Yeah, it's got to be difficult. I mean, I don't know how you reconcile where you know things are within the Catholic Church and how you feel about how you felt when you were a child. It's got to be difficult. I mean, how do you let go of those memories? What do you do with that?
You know, it's so fresh and so new at this point. And what I'm talking about when I say it's so fresh and new, I'm at the point of washing my hands completely of my connection to the Catholic Church. And that's a huge thing to say.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's the first time that I'm saying this publicly, and it is a grieving process. Okay. Because, you know, like anything else, when you come to know something or even a person well, and then that thing gets stripped away, you have to go through a process of letting go and separating from that which you have known, from the foundation with which you have grown, really. And, you know, it is not separating myself from the people in the pew, but a separating of I can't be in the midst of this space anymore.
Right.
And, you know, I certainly can't make that decision for anybody else but myself. But yeah, I mean, in that sense, it's difficult. Where it's not difficult is when I think about children. And even though we're talking about mostly adults now that have these atrocities laid upon them as innocent children, I can't get past, nor do I think anybody should get past, the fact that the church, now there may be individuals that obviously did not participate in this, but as a whole, as a system, the church was more concerned about covering up a scandal than they were about the children that were abused. And that's what I can't get past, at least not at this point.
Right.
I don't think that I ever will, because that's not something that you should get past. That's not even something that Jesus gets past. I mean, you know, you go to scripture, and, you know, I didn't come on today to start quoting and toting biblical references, but simply to say, you know, when Jesus makes it very clear that if you do anything harmful to any one of these little ones, any one of the children, he says something like, you know, you may as well throw a millstone around your neck and drown yourself in the sea.
Right.
That's how bad it is. And so that's kind of where I am.
Well, that's the problem that I have. So I went, you know, I went to St. Francis Academy in Baltimore for 4 years, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. Literally changed my life. It was an amazing school, right? And I had as a mentor a Jesuit priest who I revered. I just thought he was the greatest person in the world. Until 10 years after I graduate, right, I get a call from a private investigator. And I'm in Virginia, right?
Right.
And I get a call from a private investigator on my personal phone. I had no idea how he got the number. But he called me to ask me questions as an investigation about this priest, who I had nothing but great things to say about. And I didn't understand why I got the call. And then later on, I found out that this priest, who I revered, who I loved, who taught me so many things, and who I trusted with everything, was found to be guilty of, well, they say, inappropriate touching and molesting one of my classmates while I was in that school. So when you talk about a grieving process, it was a grieving process for me, because now I have to think differently about this man and about anything and everything that he said to me. And the question that I have for you, do you believe that when priests get in the pulpit or the altar and they say the things they say about things being an abomination or a sin against God, do you believe that they believe what they're saying when they, in turn, are doing the most, I believe, atrocious, horrible things? I mean, how can you believe something like that if you're doing these? How do you believe in the fear of God? Or, you know what I mean? How does that work?
Absolutely. No, I'm right there with you. And I think that here's the problem that I have. I have a very good friend of mine who is a black priest. To my knowledge, there have not been any, he's not here in Baltimore, but there have not been any charges or anything brought against him. I don't believe, I mean, anybody's capable of anything, Brian, but I don't believe that he has done anything atrocious. Before the news broke about the Baltimore Archdiocese, he and I had conversations about the other atrocities that have already come to light. And one of the things that I said to him while he was trying to tell me that, there is... How did he put it to me? There is sinfulness and erring in all humanity. And while I do agree with that, I'm not one to I'm not a judgmental person. I'm not a judgmental minister. That's just not where I am, because I believe scripture that says that that's not what you do. That's not your place to judge. Mm-hmm. However, when you have placed yourself in a position of authority in a religious sense over other people, and you've got congregants and members of parishes that are looking to you to lead, and you hurt a child in this manner, it's a mixing for not just for children, but for adults too. It's not just an atrocity in terms of the sexual abuse, but it's the sexual abuse mixed with your authority, where a child and even adults are looking to you as the next closest thing to getting to their God.
Right.
And that makes it even worse for me. So I certainly can't speak for what another human being is thinking when they are preaching or telling or trying to guide people in the right path, but certainly I cannot fathom the holiness of a most unholy act at the core of your being, nor can I reconcile the higher ups, the bishops, the cardinals, the auxiliary bishops that worked diligently to cover it up.
Right.
And that's one of the things that Attorney General Frosch has said, at least in this 35-page filing, is that there are multiple instances of the Baltimore Archdiocese leads, heads, covering all of this up, doing everything they could to keep the priest safe. And you really have done nothing to keep the children safe.
All right, and that's where I have the most problem. I mean, the act is horrible. The act is horrible. You know, there's no excusing the act, minimizing, trivializing the act. But the covering up portion of it, because a lot of times they take these priests out of the parish and out of the church, and they put them in, like, places of the headmasters at schools. And
right.
It's like putting fish in a barrel for them. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's the most horrible thing. You know, when I was at St. Francis, we used to do spring musicals every year. And one of the places where we would show off our skills first before we showed it to adults is mm-hmm. at St. Edward's, which was our sister school, the lower school.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the head of that school at that time was Father Blackwell, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So the two priests that I knew who were the coolest priests I ever thought, because he used to drive a BMW, right. And he was right. Cool. He spoke the jargon and the lingo. And I thought they were progressive, and they were just very, very, they were our guys to look up to, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They turned out to be the two people that are on this list that we talk about as people. And Father Blackwell, all the way back to to 1968, I believe.
Yes.
And so instead of just taking him out of service, they put him in charge of a school. I don't understand. See, that's the kind of thing I can't get past. I can't get past it.
I'm right there with you, there is no, I don't think Brian has any understanding of it other than And I'm sure some folks would take me to task on this, but it is evil at its core.
Right.
It's not just that the archdiocese moved priests who had been accused of sexual abuse to schools. They also just moved them to another parish. There is one parish that is unnamed at this point. I believe it is named in the 465-page document, where I believe, and I don't want to misquote this because I don't have the article in front of me that came out about 2 weeks ago, but I believe that there was one parish that had, over the course of 80 years, 11 different priests that abused children in that parish.
Wow.
I mean, wow. This past Friday, the Baltimore Sun headline was, "No parish was safe." And it's chilling. If I may, I think the thing that has pushed this over the edge for me personally is the fact that as a minor, an older minor, I might add, but as a minor, I was molested by a family friend.
Right.
That family friend was also Catholic. And at the time, I was still a practicing Catholic. I was not comfortable going to my parish priest, but I was traumatized, to say the very least. And I was very religious as a 17-year-old. And I sought out this priest who, for Black Catholics in particular, was the be-all and end-all. And I'm going to name him because he's on that same list that you're talking about. His name was Father Carl Fisher. He was the parish priest at St. Francis Xavier in East Baltimore, which is the oldest Black Catholic church in the country. Okay. It holds significance for me, Brian. My mother grew up in that church. It was a beacon of light for many for a number of years. St. Francis, was formed in 1863. At any rate, I made an appointment to go see Father Fisher. At the time in the 80s, he was this Black priest, up and coming, well-spoken, connected to the people, energetic, all of that. When I sat down with him, I think our meeting lasted less than 10 minutes. I'm 17. I'm traumatized. I'm seeking my faith right. and the people in it to help me through this process. And much to my surprise, I was shut down completely by Father Fisher.
In what way?
And told that, I named the person that molested me.
Okay.
Who happened to be a member of that congregation, of that parish.
Okay.
And he kind of stopped me right there. He didn't want to hear any more details. And I was instructed to go and pray for a spirit of forgiveness. Get this, Brian. If the person that I named had actually done something
wow.
egregious to me.
Wow.
Okay, so I left St. Francis that day feeling worse than I did when I walked in the doors. I had a very different view of the church at that point. At 17 years old, I didn't know the terror that the Catholic Church for centuries had put people through. I didn't know how they raped and pillaged, villages as missionaries. And not all, but a whole lot of them did, for sure. I didn't know any of that background. All I knew at that point of Catholic Church was that that was the space and place that I learned about God, that I learned that God was love, and, it kind of like stopped right at that point. So now I've got a double trauma going on. And last week, week before last, when this article came out, I had not bothered to go onto the Archdiocese website to look at any of these things. I really wasn't even moved to do that. But I tuned in to Mass at what I considered to be my home church here in Baltimore, to hear what the pastor there, the priest there, was going to say, because I knew that he was going to talk about, the article that had come out, and he did. And while I didn't disagree with anything that he said in that homily, I also did not think that he went far enough.
Right.
And so after watching or listening to what he had to say, I went on to the Archdiocese website and just started scrolling through names. And much to my surprise, Father Carl Fisher's name was on that list.
Wow.
So the same person that I go to for spiritual counsel that makes me question whether or not this molestation actually happened to me, he himself was accused
on the list.
And what did happen to him? And this goes beyond Baltimore. And see, this is what I'm talking about with the systematic way in which this stuff is just rolling out. He gets promoted to auxiliary bishop of Los Angeles.
Mm-mm-mm.
That doesn't come from the Baltimore Archdiocese. That comes from the Vatican.
Right. And so that's the question that I have. How is it, with all of the knowledge that is out, it's public record now. It's not a secret. It hasn't been a secret for decades, for generations.
Yeah.
With all of the knowledge that is out here, how is this faith still surviving? How I don't understand how people still file through the doors of an organization that has been corrupt, not just with children, but financially for so long. I mean, it's out here. How does it still survive?
Right. I think that, and I'm presupposing because obviously I've not, asked that question. I have questions of my own that I do intend on asking the priest who is pastoring the church that I consider my home church, which the only reason I'm not naming it today with you is because, to be fair, this is somebody that right now I still hold in high regard as an individual. I'm not necessarily saying as a priest at this point, but as a person. And I want to give him the opportunity to tell me what he's going to do.
Right.
Because the answer to your question, I don't know that there is one, except for the fact that, with many things where we as a people, and now I'm talking about Black folks
right.
in particular, where we as a people don't do our due diligence in educating ourselves, and we just simply allow someone else to kind of pave the road for us, spiritually or otherwise. If I didn't know any better, even listening to what this particular priest said last Sunday, while I found nothing egregious in what he said, I still didn't think that it went far enough. So yes, I'm a person of prayer. I do believe that the victims of sexual abuse need to be prayed for, absolutely. I even believe that those that committed the sin, the sexual abuse themselves, the priests, the religious brothers, need to be prayed for because their souls are sick. I do believe that. But I don't believe that when you know what you know, you have a responsibility to do something with the knowledge that you have. And sitting in a pew only and praying is not good enough.
Right.
It's not good enough.
And that's the problem that I have. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, but you and I had this conversation once before about this and about this particular priest that you're referring to.
Right.
And I say any priest that knows, and they know what has gone on, they know what goes on, and any priest that puts on a collar in the morning and gets up and continues to recruit members to still have money come funneling through the system, which eventually a percentage of that money goes to the Vatican, the Archdiocese of this state and the Vatican eventually, to help fund a defense fund for these priests. If you're doing that, how good of a person are you? And who are you helping really? And that's the problem that I have with when we call them, it's almost like saying the cop that stood next to the cop that beat up the cop, beat up the person, but didn't beat him up himself, was a good cop. I don't believe that.
Yeah, right. No, I'm right there with you. And like you said, you and I have had this discussion. And, because it hits home so closely for me, it has been a process for me to process what you just said.
Right.
When you know people personally and it does make it difficult. At this juncture, I must say that the only way, because I actually had this conversation with my sister as well, and the only way that I can foresee a priest in the Baltimore Archdiocese, that's what we're talking about right now.
Right.
The only way that I can see you staying in the position that you're in this church, and when I say this church, I mean the Catholic Church, capital C, in this denomination, it is if you are going to now be willing to fight for justice and to, in essence, to swim against the tide mm-hmm. that is rolling in, and to stand up and to publicly say that this is what you are doing. I bring that up because, you know, when you talk about the, and I know we don't have time to get into church history, so to speak, but before the 15th century or 16th century, you know, there was one church, one denomination that we now know as the Catholic Church. Protestantism came out of a protest. That's where we get the word Protestant from. To protest was protesting some things about the Catholic Church. And even with one person in particular, they started off as a monk in the church trying to effectuate change within the walls of the church until the church excommunicated the brother.
Wow.
Okay. And so, we're talking centuries ago, I know. And that, you know, when we get to looking at the history of this, you know, anytime someone comes up against whatever the Catholic Church is trying to do or promote, they were either killed, excommunicated, or, you know, it's like, you know, it's our way or the highway. So unless you are going to call for change and demand it and stand up against it publicly, I am in complete agreement with you. I don't know how you put on the collar every day. I don't know how you make a case for Catholicism. I don't know how you do it.
All right. So what are your plans? Do you plan to speak to this priest personally? And what do you think you might say? Just briefly.
Yeah. So the answer to that is yes. I am going to tune in from my bedroom tomorrow morning. I'm going to give him one more chance to see if he goes any further today than he did last Sunday. And whichever way it turns out, my plan is to email him first, to give him some of my thoughts, to tell him about me finding Father Fisher's name on that list and what that did to me. This priest is not aware of the fact that I was molested, so he has no knowledge of that. But I want to bring that to the forefront, and then I'm going to invite him to have a conversation face-to-face.
Okay.
And then, after that, Brian, I don't know. I can tell you this, though. I am praying for the minds and the hearts of those that sit in the pews, not just at that church, the place that I call my home church, but at every church in this diocese, that folks would wake up, and especially Black Catholics. Right. And I keep on emphasizing that because of the history of Black Catholics in this city, that there needs to be a clarion call for Black Catholics to stand up. You know, you and I have talked about the priests on the list, and the sad thing is every single one that you and I both know on that list is Black.
Yep.
And that is beyond disturbing for me.
Yep.
And I know it is for you as well.
It is very, very disturbing to me. And like I told you, I grieved. I mean, I grieved over the years. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the other question. And I know that rape and molestation of young people in the church is not exclusive to the Catholic Church. You know, you have people like Bishop Eddie Long and a long list
right.
of others.
Right.
But overwhelmingly, it's been a Catholic thing. Catholic priests have been overwhelmingly the majority of clergy that have done this thing. It's generational is what it is. It's been going on for generations. Why do you think that is so prevalent in the Catholic Church with Catholic priests?
Now, this is going to be Dr. Lori Harrison's opinion, and I want to make that clear for your listeners because I have no factual proof of what I'm about to say. I think most listeners know that Catholic priests are unable to marry, and therefore they are supposed to be unable to have sexual relations with anyone.
Right.
I do not believe that, number one, that is the way that God designed the majority of us.
Correct.
Now, there
I
are
agree.
Always exceptions. There are always people that are asexual, that are eunuchs, that are always people that fall into an exceptional category. But the norm, the general norm. We are not made like that. We are made to be relational. We are made to have sexual urges. And I think that when you, because I can't find any solid reason that makes sense to me as to why you would not permit marriage in the church. You know, people with pent up feelings and even aggressions, you know, take it out. That's what abusers do. They take it out on the weakest person or persons in their midst.
Right.
And so, you know, I think that that is inherently part of the problem. This is not something that we do as human beings to not be sexual in some nature. And, you know, when it's pent up, I think we see what happens when, you know, urges get pent up and then perverted, you know, and that in and of itself, I'm sure somebody somewhere is probably doing a study on that or is going to for sure. And I don't know how you fix that other than to go to the root of the way in which the church functions and, you know, unravel it at its seams. You know, and it's not, I mean, we're not talking about, you know, an easy 1-2-3 fix here.
No,
but I think
not.
that, you know, for centuries, all of the abominable acts are now, they are rising to the surface.
Yes, they are.
They are rising to the surface. And you would have to be, I mean, Stevie Wonder could even see that we got a problem and it needs to be fixed.
Absolutely. And so the question is, do you think that the Vatican, the bishops, the cardinals, the Pope himself, do you think that they're ready to change the scrolls of the Catholic religion, the rules, and permit priests to marry? I mean, it's gotten to a point now where you're like you're saying, you can't run away from it, you can't hide it, you can't sweep it,
right.
And you can't
right.
just keep moving priests from parish to parish anymore. The world is too small now, and the magnifying glass is too big. So do you think those rules will change?
Can I flip that script just a little bit?
Sure.
Revolution never happens from the top down.
Okay.
It always happens from the people, from the ground level up. So I think that to answer your question, whether the higher ups, whether the Pope, the cardinals, the bishops around this world are ready for it to change, I think will be wholly dependent upon whether the masses will rise up and say no more.
Okay.
Because without that, I do not think that it's going to happen. I really don't. I think that the Catholic Church will either implode or explode another way. I mean, because I think a demise is imminent.
Okay.
I really do.
Okay.
But I, in order for it to change and any semblance of what we see or know as the Catholic Church, the positive pieces of it, it's going to have to happen through revolutionary measures. And when I say that, I am not calling, I want your listeners to understand, I'm not calling for violence. I'm not saying that something tragic needs to happen. We don't need to have an insurrection with the archdiocese.
Right.
So I want to be real clear about that. I am
right.
not saying that. But what I am saying is it is going to take the masses of Catholics within this archdiocese to say no more.
Right.
No more. You know, because for a very long time, there's always been a sort of divide between the church in Rome and the U.S. and U.S. Catholicism, because U.S. Catholicism has been seen globally to be a little more lax than other places around the world, certainly more lax than in Rome itself. But people need to wake. Well, I was gonna. People need to wake up. Let me say that. I don't want to use unpleasant language on a Sunday morning on your show.
I understand.
Be the cussing preacher. But people need to wake the blankety blank up.
Right. I understand.
And insist no more.
Well, on that note. I mean, this has been a very, very fast 35 minutes, and I appreciate your time.
Yes, it has been.
It's just gone by really fast, and it's a very hot topic. It's a very, very controversial one, and it's a very touchy one. I mean, it's a very sensitive
yeah.
subject, but it has to be spoken about, and has to be spoken about openly, and has to be spoken about in an educated way by educated people such as yourself. So thank you so much for coming on the show today again and dropping some nuggets of wisdom on us. I appreciate you very much.
Well, Brian, thank you for having me back. I'm always willing to come on. You got a great show. I wish you the best with all that you're doing. I know that you're just going to keep on going higher and higher. It's going to get better and better. It's already great. So thank you for having me back. And I hope, again, that this is not the last time that we get to have a conversation.
My pleasure completely, and thank you so much for those words. You have an amazing Sunday, okay?
You do the same. You do the same.
Bye-bye. That's right. I know you hear the music. That means it is time for the Petty. I'm going to give him a call, give him a holler, see what he's talking about this week as far as his NFL picks today and Monday and Thursday, see how he fared last week, and see what he's got to say about my Ravens. Let's give him a holler.
Brother B, how are you?
I am well, sir. It is the Petty. It is the Petty on 1500. How you doing, man?
I'm doing just great, and happy holiday weekend to you, brother.
Same to you, same to you, same to you. You didn't overeat, did you?
Just a tad bit, but, you know, all is well. Yeah. It's the weekend now, and so it's time to work that thing off and get ready for the next holiday, which will be in the next couple of weeks. But first of all, I like to say that, man, let me tell you something. Thursday was fantastic. I loved it. 3-0 this past Thursday, okay, which is incredible for me. And I'm ready to get the Sunday thing started because I have a feeling it might be carrying over to like maybe a 16-0 week this week.
Oh, you think you're on a hot streak?
I think I'm on a hot streak.
All right.
Thursday was a little easy, but I think let's get this thing cracking.
All right. And run it down.
We're going to start with the 1 o'clock slate. And I'm talking about those swashbuckling Buccaneers going into Cleveland to see those crusty Browns. I do not like that team. And it's for me, that's an easy pick for me. I like Tampa.
Okay.
Next up, we have those Cincinnati Bengals traveling to Tennessee to see the Titans. Cincinnati has been coming on pretty strong lately, but I think the Titans are looking to go on a run as far as the playoffs. And like I said a couple of weeks ago, it's time to separate the boys from the men's. This is a big game. This is huge. And if Cincinnati can't stop that run, Tennessee is going to be on fire. And they're at home. So I like Tennessee over Cincinnati.
All right.
Next up, this is kind of an easy one for me. It might be a little harder than a lot of people think it's going to be, but I like Miami over Houston. Houston's going down to South Beach, and Miami is starting to fire on all cylinders. I like Miami over Houston.
Okay, okay.
Now, this is one that might be an upset, and I had those Chicago Bears going to see those J-E-T-S Jets, who looked horrible last week. They looked so bad that there's going to be a quarterback change, but I don't know how much that's going to affect the team. And even though Chicago's going into New York / Jersey, for some odd reason, I like Justin Fields better than I like whoever Chicago decides to start. Whoever New York decides to start. So I like the Bears upsetting the Jets at home.
Well, Fields is hurt, right?
Well, you still might see Fields anyway. He's a little banged up, but you still might see him on the field. And if Fields is playing, I like Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
Over the Jets.
Absolutely.
Next, we had those Dirty Birds going to see those Commanders in D.C. / Landover. And I got to admit, the Commanders are looking pretty good. I was a little disappointed in the loss that they took against the Vikings, but they are still an above 500 team. I like Taylor Heineke. I like them winning this game at home over those Dirty Birds from Atlanta.
Now, you know Chase Young is coming back.
And that's even a bigger benefit for the Commanders.
Yeah,
so I do like the Commanders. I like the Commanders over the Falcons.
All right.
Next up, we have Russell Wilson and those Denver Broncos going to Carolina. I can't figure this Carolina team out. No one can. They fire their coach. They get rid of a couple of players, but they're playing good ball. They're doing a merry-go-round of quarterbacks with Baker Mayfield 1 week, P.J. Walker another week, Sam Darnold another week. We can't figure this team out. But at home, they play tough. I like them over the Denver Broncos.
Okay.
And finally, on the 1 o'clock slate, we have your Baltimore Ravens.
Yes, sir.
Going down to Jacksonville to meet those Jacksonville Jaguars. Jacksonville's a tough team. Doug Peterson got them a little fired up. They're losing ugly in a lot of games they should be winning, but they're losing. I think Baltimore's a better team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so
come with it.
I'm going to take the Ravens.
That's what I'm talking about. Okay.
I'm going to take the Ravens because they are a better team than Jacksonville.
Okay.
It is what it is. So we're going to go to our 4 o'clock slate, and we've got the L.A. Chargers going out to the desert to meet those Redbirds, the Cardinals. I like the Chargers in this one. I don't know what's going on in Arizona. I don't know what's going on with the coaches. I don't know what's going on with the quarterback situation. They're just a team in disarray, in my opinion. So I think the Chargers are not a better team than Arizona. But the way that they're playing right now, I do think that they can go down into the desert and beat the Cardinals. Okay. So I like the Chargers over the Cardinals.
All right, all right.
Next up, we have the Raiders from Las Vegas going out to see those Sea Chickens in Seattle. I don't know about the Raiders. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on with them. Derek Carr is crying. I don't think Josh McDaniels is the coach for that team. And Seattle is playing pretty good ball right now. I think Geno Smith might be the play, but the comeback player of the year. So I'm going to take Seattle over the Las Vegas Raiders.
I told you week 2, Geno Smith was the truth this year.
Yeah, you did. And Geno's looking pretty good.
He's a beast.
I think he will be the comeback player of the year. Next up on our 4 o'clock slate, we have the LA Rams going out to play the Chiefs out in Kansas City. And I'm going to call the Rams the Lambs because they are just playing soft. You talking about Super Bowl hangover. This is probably the biggest disappointment for a Super Bowl team in years. And wow. I do not see them going out to Kansas City and beating the Chiefs. I just don't see it.
Okay.
You know, I just don't. And finally, on our 4 o'clock slate, we have the Saints marching into the Golden Gate City to play those 49ers who are getting healthy, and they looked very good last week.
Oh, Lord.
Let's just put it like this. They shut the team out in the second half. They shut the Chargers out in the second half, and 49ers are playing good ball right now. They are. And everybody's talking about them. They're saying that the Eagles better look out, the Vikings better look out, and everybody else in the NFC better look out for this team because they are getting healthy, and they may find themselves in the Super Bowl. So I like the 49ers over the Saints.
Okay. All right.
And finally on tonight's schedule, well, today's schedule, we're going to end up with the night game with those cheeseheads from Green Bay, those Packers, going to meet those pigeons in Philadelphia. I'm talking about those 9-1 Eagles. Let me tell you something. I don't know what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. I don't. Maybe he might not want to play for the Packers no more. I don't know.
I hear rumor that the Commanders are trying to get Aaron Rodgers.
And I heard a rumor there are 3 other teams that are trying to get Aaron Rodgers, one of them being the 49ers. I don't think they want him. I don't think anybody else may want him because Aaron Rodgers, who is a multiple-time MVP, who's definitely going to be a Hall of Famer, is not looking like the Aaron Rodgers that we know.
He's washed up.
So with that being said, I'm going to take the Eagles at home.
Okay.
Tonight over the Cheeseheads. And finally, we're going to round this thing up with Pittsburgh going to Indianapolis to play those laughable Colts. And I shouldn't say that because the Colts have been playing well lately. They played the Eagles tough. They gave the Eagles a run.
Right.
And maybe Jeff Saturday is not the laugher that they think that he is as far as coaching. They say he has no experience. And sometimes someone who's played the game, as Jeff Saturday has, is maybe a better teacher than someone who's never played the game. And some of these coaches have never played the game. So I like the Steelers, though. They're just a better team. I think they're a better coach team. And I got to take the Steelers over to Indianapolis on Monday night.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
And finally, here we go with our Thursday night game. We're talking about those Buffalo Hot Wing Bills going to New England to meet the Patriots. Maybe Buffalo's got it back together again. I don't know. They looked pretty good Thanksgiving in Detroit, even though they had to come from behind to win.
They should have lost that game.
They should have, but that's what makes Buffalo a little better than other teams. They have the ability to come back and win.
That 4th-and-1 call by the Lions coach was a horrible call.
It may have been. It was a horrible call.
They should have gone for the 1 yard because they were going to lose the game either way.
They should have. But as I said, those Bills have a way of coming back and winning the game. I'm pretty sure you remember how they came back on the Ravens.
I do.
Several weeks ago.
I do.
So never count Buffalo out of the game. And even though it was only several seconds left, they found a way to come back and beat Detroit in Detroit on Thanksgiving Day. So with that being said, I don't think they'll have a problem going up to New England Thursday evening and beating the Patriots.
I say this, if it comes down to a coaching decision like the one that was made on Thanksgiving Day by the opposing team, Belichick's not going to make a mistake like the Lions did. So if it comes down to that,
he's one of the best coaches out there, but I don't think he has the talent and the players to beat Buffalo. I think Buffalo is the top team in the AFC East.
Right.
I think they will definitely be in the playoffs, and this is one of those times where they have a chance to really stick to Belichick and beat those Patriots.
Okay.
So with that being said, let's take the Bills over the Patriots on Thursday evening. I got to get out of here, Brother B. It's been wonderful talking to you. I hope you didn't get too full on turkey. I hope you had a wonderful weekend.
I did.
And I love your show. Happy to be a part of it. And I will see you later.
All right, bro.
I'm out of here. Peace.
Peace to you, brother. Out. Well, there you have it from the Petty, from his mouth to our ears to our pockets. Go place your bets and make some money. I hope he does continue the hot streak that he thinks he's on, because there's nothing wrong with a little bit of extra cash. And I'm always appreciative of the time and expertise that he gives us to help put a little change in our pockets. And also, I want to thank the Reverend Dr. Lori Harrison for coming on today, as she has done before. She's dropped us a lot of knowledge and wisdom, and I don't want you to think that I'm bashing anyone's religion. If you are Catholic and you listen to the show, thank you for listening. Help us do something about it. I am not Catholic, have never been, but I did attend Catholic school. I've gone to masses because of that school that I attended, and I was very, very close to a Jesuit priest. So I did have my own personal emotional investment in the religion, and I did study it while I was in high school. Well, I'm not in high school anymore. And when you know better, you do better. So my job is to inform. That's what I've tried to do today. It is not to pick on anything or anyone or any of your personal beliefs. I just want you to understand and make informed decisions about where you spend your time, who you give your money to, and who you invest your heart and your emotions into. It's very, very important that we know what's going on in the world, and we're not just listening to what's being told to us by the people who have a personal investment in keeping information away from us. There is no way to sugarcoat what has been going on within the Catholic organization for generations. I mean, generations. The AG's report takes us back 80 years. There's no way to excuse that. There's no way to minimize the atrocities of it. And there's no way to dance around a problem that still persists today. So, of course, I want to hear from you. I want to hear your opinions, your thoughts, how you feel. Get at me on IG at On with Brian Pettaway. I will listen. I will read. I will reply. But it's very important that I know how you feel. And I'm sure it will be a little cathartic to get it off your chest to let me know how you feel. So I look forward to your messages again on IG at On with Brian Pettaway, and I can't wait to read what you have to say. So listen, it's about that time. The hour is over. I tell you, it's the fastest hour of my life because I love doing what I do. I'm so appreciative that you are here spending that hour with me today. Hopefully, we all learned a little bit today that we can use moving forward, making better decisions that in turn make our lives and the people that we love in our lives a little bit easier. But before I go, I'm going to tell you what I tell you every single Sunday. Hey, enjoy today. Watch your games, eat your food, what's left over from Thanksgiving, chill, relax, do nothing. But the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. Tomorrow, wake up that Monday morning fresh, ready to conquer the world like your boy's going to do. That's my philosophy every Monday, is to get it right and enjoy the week, be energized, and kill it. Yo, go Ravens. I got to get out of here, people. Peace.